There you go, Astro Boy, on your flight into space. Rocket high through the sky, what adventure soon you will make. Astro Boy bombs away on your mission today. Here's a countdown and a blast of everything is go, Astro Boy. Astro Boy, as you fly, strange new world you will find. Adam Sam, Jeff Propel, fighting monsters high in the sky. Astro Boy, there you go.
And you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And yes, today finally is the interview with Bernie Moreau. You'll have to excuse me. Some maniacal laughter will ensue. Because technology tried really hard for me not to play this interview for you. Like, it was like some evil demon technology overlord was like, you know, totally against me. And even this morning, it had massive crisis and couldn't play the interview like usual. And I finally actually managed to get it together with special, special help from my friend Ephraim, who is like my producer. He is my computer god. I totally worship him. I could not have done this actual episode without him at all because of stupid technology. Was totally against me as far as the Bernie Moreau interview went. But anyways, blah, blah, blah. Play the Astro Boy intro because I saw the preview for the new Astro Boy movie when I went to go see Monsters vs. Aliens last week. So I thought that would be really appropriate, also because Bernie's kind of into Japanese manga and animation. Now, who is Bernie Moreau? You may be asking yourself that. Bernie has been in the comic book industry for like 3 decades. Can you believe it? He has started with Heavy Metal, the movie. He was like, doing jobs for them left, right, and center. He's done stuff with Grendel. He created his own series, The Jam. And we're going to get into all that. But I just want, my first experience with Bernie was when I first started getting into comics, it was really hard to try and find good, alternative, interesting comics because I'm not, you know, I do like the superhero stuff, but I'm not like crazy about it. I don't go, you know, it's not what feeds my soul, shall we say. So I'd always go looking through the back issue bins. And the best place to look if you're, you know, if you yourself are starting to get into alternative comics, the best place to look is the miscellaneous, like J miscellaneous or B miscellaneous. And usually that's where the most comic book stores cram all their weird alternative stuff that they have no idea what to do with. So that's where the first time I saw The Jam. And The Jam is this really hilarious comic where it's like, he's not a superhero, he's just a regular guy, but he has like this superhero costume, and the first issue I got, he went out and walked the dog and accidentally, inadvertently ended up foiling a bank robbery and then became the sort of superhero inadvertently, and that really cracks me up. I really quite enjoy it. Usually The Jam kind of seems like it's going to be a superhero comic, but invariably Bernie makes it into this sort of relationship discussion about life and couples, and I find that fascinating and really interesting, and it's fresh to me. Anyways, Bernie's style is so distinct. Like, you cannot ever mistake it for anyone else's. He has sort of a chunky, angular style, but he can also, it definitely gets smooth. His coloring is unlike anybody else's. He was one of the first artists I saw doing computer coloring where it looked like computer coloring, but it still looked very stylish and interesting. It's his definite voice, which I love so much. He's a great cartoonist. Anyways, go look him up, Bernie Moreau, if you're near your computer. We're going to play the interview with him. I guess I don't really have anything more to say. I'm just so happy I can finally play this for you. Oh, yeah, I know what I wanted to say. His style is also kind of sort of pseudo-Victorian. Like, it reminds me a bit of Ruggieri. Because the other thing, too, is even though I said it was sort of chunky and angular, it's very tight. Like, he's an accomplished artist, you know? Like, he's not just this rainy day artist who, you know, sort of self-taught and throws it out there. Like, he really spends a lot of time and effort in what he creates. And he does some painting. paintings and he does animations and he does comics as well. And it's all very beautiful, beautiful stuff. So yeah, we're just going to go to the interview. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is my interview with Bernie Moreau, and this is the Onomatopoeia Show. Enjoy.
We're talking to Bernie Moreau. He is an excellent comic book artiste who's been in the comic scene for, I don't want to say eons because that's
almost
exaggerating, but
30 years.
30 years. That's, wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Time goes by no matter what you do. It just goes by. And the older I get, the faster it goes by. So I wouldn't be, hopefully I'll be able to be say, I've been doing this for 50 years, you know.
Well, you're most famous probably for your Grendel work, but my favorite work of yours is The Jam. And so I wanted to start at the beginning of your career and kind of go through it a bit, and then we'll get to the good stuff. You know, you just told me, and this is so incredible, that you actually worked on the heavy metal movie.
That's right. That was one of the first really good-paying jobs I ever got. Prior to that, it was minimum wage, washing dishes or what have you. But then, while I was going to CEGEP here in Quebec, in Montreal, I heard about the heavy metal film, which was setting up production in the city. It had this huge cattle call for artists to work as animators and painters and designers on the film. And I showed up, and such was their need that even though I didn't really know animation at the time, I got hired for the work. And everybody that I worked with were so nice and so helpful that they brought me up to speed and helped me to fulfill the role of an assistant animator. And it was a lot of fun. It lasted for about a year.
What did you do? Did you do the backgrounds or the people, the hair, the coloring, everything?
as an assistant animator, my job was to fill in the designs of the key animation. That's somebody, they do all the basic key drawings, the heights, the high points of the motion, and an in-betweener, following a guide that the animator would provide, would fill in the in-between images and make it all as smooth as possible. And also, when that was over, I went to the paint and trace department, which was all about painting on cell. And I fell in love with that, which led to a whole bunch of comic art coloring that I did using animation cell painting style. And that was a lot of fun. So I have heavy metal to thank for all of that.
Which pieces did you work on? Did you say you worked on the whole movie or just one specific segment?
Yeah, only one segment was made in Montreal. That was the Tarnas segment. That was where they took Mobius's character. Mobius, a very famous French cartoonist, he had a character that had appeared in Pilote magazine called Arzak, who was sort of a futuristic, spiritual, pterodactyl-riding dude who was very holy and had cosmic experiences with crystals. And heavy metal, of course, they North Americanized it in that they changed Arzak into chainmail bikini wearing babe with an eye patch.
Of course, it's heavy metal after all, not metal her long.
That's right, and that segment was called the Tarna sequence. Heavy metal was about five or six different bits. Each bit was done, some in London, England, some in the United States, all over the world, parts of that movie were made.
Now, did you get to meet any cool people like Mobius, or have the people that you worked with formerly gone on to greater things?
Well, I worked briefly with Brent Boats, who is a Vancouver
right?
And it was funny to meet him and to listen about his career after that. He designed the Ghostbusters logo that got the film production crew sued by Harvey Comics, claiming that Mr. Boats had copied their Ghost Fatso from the Casper comic a little too closely. That was fun. But other than that, to all the people there, whether they're famous or not, they were all wonderful artists from all over the world, and they're really helpful. That's the main thing. They're really generous, and no one kept anything back as a trade secret. Everybody was just like being surrounded by 50 teachers.
That's a fantastic beginning.
Yeah.
Now, speaking of teachers, were you drawing as a child and you've just been drawing ever since, or was it something you got into in high school?
I was pretty late. I think it was 18 before I seriously decided I was going to draw comics specifically. I started out being into collecting butterflies, and I did that obsessively. Then I switched over to building airplane models, and I did that obsessively. And then, only when I was 17 or 18, I had stopped all that stuff and spent a few years kind of listening to music and meeting girls and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden, I started going to CEGEP in Montreal, and there was this 1-hour bus ride between the rural town that I was living in, Rodden, Quebec, and Montreal. and I started reading comic books just to pass the time along the bus ride. They were all Marvel and DC superhero comics, and I thought they were all terrible, but they really inspired me to try and make my own and to do better.
Have you had any formal training?
No. School was always very kind of... I always lived in rural communities. I always got taught math by a science teacher, and a nun would teach me geography, you know. Never had a very precise education, and especially art. Art was always like an extra, a nicety that wasn't necessarily on the curriculum. It was only after I started going to Sechep that I took a few art courses that it really sort of sharpened my desire to do it. I felt like I had a facility for it, and it really gave me a lot of enjoyment.
Now, you mentioned that the Jam was appearing first in Northgard. Would you say that's the first comic you had published, or was it Mackenzie Queen?
Well, when I was about 18 or so and living in Montreal for the first time, I met Mark Shainbloom and Gabriel Morissette. The two of these guys together made Matrix Graphics Series, which was the name of their company. And that was an entity designed to launch their comic Northgard, which was like a Captain America but a la Canada. And I met with them and we got along well. They invited me to contribute a backup story, and that was my sort of superhero satire character called the Jam, who basically wears the superhero type outfit but has no superpowers whatsoever.
Yeah, he likes to take the dog for walks.
If he can pay the rent, that's a good day. That's a superpower.
Yeah. I love him. He's very funny. So from the Jam, you started meeting other people in the comics community, specifically in Montreal, or from all the outer world as well?
I used to go to MapleCon, my one and only real comic convention, which was in Ottawa. And that was a place I got to kind of, not necessarily meet, but to hang out on the edge of the crowd and watch celebrities who were famous cartoonists and that I knew of, because I was right into the stuff they were doing, the Iron Man, the Hulk. I love superhero comics. I mean, when I was younger, I always read Peanuts and Nancy and all these old-style comics, and I always enjoyed them, but they never really inspired me to make comics, not like the superhero stuff. For some reason, I guess maybe it's being a young boy, you know, and the whole wham, pow thing.
Well, and then having all these crazy powers.
Yeah, and more than that, it seemed to be like literature that was devoted strictly to justice and the consideration of justice and what was right and wrong. And that really catches your sort of sense of honor. And when it's well done, it can be very kind of morally uplifting. Mm-hmm. You know, so I really enjoyed that aspect, though. Of course, that's gone to heck over the last couple of years.
They've come a bit darker.
I guess money talks, and if these dark stories didn't make a lot of money, then they wouldn't get made and everything would be all morally upright, you know.
So tell me about Mackenzie Queen.
Mackenzie Queen was the result of my intense desire to do a Steve Ditko, Stan Lee, Doctor Strange story. I just read a couple of collections of their early work on that character from Marvel, and it just had so much atmosphere, and the artwork was so original and personal that it really moved me a lot and inspired me to throw myself headlong into my first series. Mackenzie Queen ended up being 5 issues long, and it got collected once by Caliber Comics. That was about 15 years ago. And it's still hanging around. I still like to contribute more to that character and get an ultimate collection sometime. Perhaps touch up the artwork again. That's always a temptation. Definitely I'd like to smooth some edges. But I still like the work, you know. All the old stories that I've done, they're all like my children. And I love them all. And I'm not ashamed of any of them. And I'll bring them out anytime, anywhere.
After Mackenzie Queen, is that when you started to get noticed by Matt Wagner?
I sent Matt Wagner a fan letter. He had just been doing Mage at the time, which was getting a lot of critical attention. And I wrote him a letter that was sort of like, well, yes, your work is interesting, but you really don't put a lot of backgrounds in. It could be really improved if you did more background work. You know, don't be scared of the work. The big sound effects are great, but let's have some background information. And he wrote me back, which was a surprise. Or he didn't write me back, he called me. And, hello, Bernie Miro there, this is him. this is Matt Wagner. And I thought, oh my God, I've upset him
so much. He's
criticism,
calling me.
You know, he's calling me to chew my ass or something. You know, I had a negative reaction. But he was very kind and invited me to do a small run on Grendel, a three-issue run.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. That was my interview with Bernie Moreau. He is the comic artist behind The Jam, as well as he did some work for Grendel. He does a lot of coloring here and there for everybody. And he magically pops up in a lot of anthologies, which we will also talk about. But quickly, let's get to some of the ads, and then we're going to play some music. And one of the tracks that we're going to play is actually by Bernie. He's written it, and he plays bass guitar on it. He's in a band called Bug Eye Monster. The singer is Francine Grant, and the guitar player is David Beckia. And I hope you enjoy it. It's called Stupid Human. And I'm not saying it's about you. I'm just kidding. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
Let the rhythm hit 'em. Let the rhythm hit 'em. CJLO 1690 AM. Tune in every Tuesday night from 10 to 11 with your hour of hip hop. Only here, CJLO 1690 AM.
Let the rhythm hit 'em.
But I love you and I know.
listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, the show about comics where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And that was Bug-Eyed Monster, a venue for Bernie to make music with. And it was called Stupid Humans. It was pretty. Anyways, we're going to do some news now while we still can, because we got lots of interview to get to. And I haven't done the news in a while, so there's lots to say. Yes, yes. One of the things that they were talking about in the last show is I had to go buy a birthday present yesterday because, you know, some of the children that I babysit have birthdays. You know, they grow old. and so I was getting some stuff. I got her a kite. But one of the things I saw, and I, of course, had to own. I mean, it was really cheap. It was like $15. Was they've got, Barbie's got this new movie. It's Thumbelina. And they've done these new dolls, right? But the dolls are really, okay, like, it doesn't look like Barbie anymore. She's got, like, this giant head with these big sort of Japanese eyes, you know, like in manga. And this Cupid bow lips. But she also has, like, these sort of thigh-high stockings, which makes her look a little bit like a hooker. And then she also has a little bit of this sort of cock to her hip, you know, like she's on the street corner trying to sell something. You know, it's kind of, I'm just like, what are they trying to sell the children? I don't even have any and I'm concerned about it. But anyways, that's the new Thumbelina doll from Barbie. They're like these weird little flower fairies. They're adorable, but if I had a daughter, I don't know if I'd be getting it for her. Anyway, some other news. I just read this in the Concordian newspaper. I thought it was fantastic, so I'm going to read it to you. A Thai firefighter dressed up as Spider-Man in an effort to coax an autistic boy off a third-floor window ledge. It was reportedly the boy's first day at a special needs school. Teachers were unable to convince the 8-year-old boy to re-enter the classroom after he became upset and started crying. He crawled onto the ledge. When his mother mentioned the boy loved comic book superheroes, one of the firefighters went back into the station to get his Spider-Man costume that he keeps in his locker. Now, why the firefighter keeps the Spider-Man costume in his locker is a whole other story. So thanks for the Concordia newspaper for reporting on that. I thought that's a interesting little superhero tidbit. They're really out there and they're saving lives. Anyways, if you like Guy Delisle, he's the guy that did Pyongyang, his experiences in North Korea, a great comic put out by John and Quarterly. He also did one about his experiences in Burma. He's currently doing one about his time in Jerusalem. And if you go to www.guydelisle, which is D-E-L-I-S-L-E, I'm probably mispronouncing it. I totally don't deny it. Could be Delise. I mean, I'm not French Canadian. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Guy. Please don't be mad at me. When I interview, I will get your name right. Anyways, so guydelisle.com/WordPress/. And then you can see some pages from the new comic, which is kind of exciting, right? If you're into that stuff. Also, Mark Bell is part of a group show in Toronto. It's at the Magic Pony Gallery. The show is called Life Drawing, and it runs until May 10th. I know there's a lot of Mark Bell fans out there, so, you know, Toronto's not that far away. It's worth going to. Also, the Schuster Award nominees have been announced. These are Canada's comic book awards, and they are awarded on July 27th at the Paradise Comic Con. So I knew some of these people, actually. It's kind of interesting. There's a good mix of French and English. Marc de la Fontaine, I don't know who that is, but he did Les Nombrils 3. Dale Eaglesham for his JSA. David Finch for his Ultimatum Marvel stuff. Carl Kerschel and Serge Lapointe for Teen Titans. Jacques Lamontagne for Les Druids. Steve McNiven for Amazing Spider-Man, Steve Rolston for Amico Superstar, House of Mystery, and You Ain't No Dancer, Steve Zdowski for Avengers and Superpowers and Jack the Lantern. For Best Cartoonist, we've got Georges Bouchard for Vers le Monde Lutin, and Darwin Cook for New Frontier Special in the Spirit, Frances Deschenais for Burkett, Jean-Paul Ide for Des Tondeuses et Des Hommes, and Michael Gagné for The Saga of Rex, and also Flight Volume 5. Faith Aaron Hicks for War at Ellesmere, Jeff Lemire for Essex County, Seth for Historian Kramer's Urgot, and Dave Sim for Glamour Puss, his magazine series. Also for Best Writer, there's Ian Boothby, who does lots of Simpsons comics, Cecil Castellucci, who does the Jane's in Love for DC and Manx. She's also a Montrealer who was in a great indie bands in the 90s, like Nerdy Girl. Darwin Cook, who, again, for his Frontier special. Maryse Dubois for Les Nombrils 3. Ray Fox for Apocalyptic. Francoise Lepere for my French is not so good. And let's just say she's up there, or he, Francois. Yeah, my French is terrible. Mariko Tamaki for Miko Superstar and Skim, and Jay Torres for a whole bunch of stuff. They've also got best cover, best colorist, and best webcomic, and best publisher. So if you just look up Schuster Awards online, it'll tell you all the people that are up for awards, which is kind of cool. You know, Canadian Comic Book Awards, it's worth it. Also, I've just found out that Seth is putting out his continuing Palookaville series in hardcover format now, I guess kind of like Chris Ware. Besides including an ongoing serialization of the Clyde fans graphic novel, the book will also have space for cartoonists to examine, for the cartoonists as in Seth, to examine other topics of interest in various formats. I think that's kind of cheesy, Seth. I mean, I've kind of been totally not interested in his comics for a while now, that I'm finding Clyde fans to be a little boring. And the fact that he's putting them out in graphic novel format and hardcover, it's kind of like, it's just another cash grab, you know, because then as soon as it's all done, he's going to be collecting it again, and it's going to probably be in hardcover again. And I just, you know, there's some things I will pay money for to get a hardcover, and some things I won't, you know. Like, I was in HMV the other day because I got finally got the Sesame Street old school DVD, and they had a bunch of graphic novels for sale there, and one of them was the Frank Quietly Grant Morrison Superman, and I do want to get that, and it's pretty cheap, so, you know, you think I'd get it, but I'm really having a hard time going, why do I need it in hardcover? I'm just going to wait for the soft cover. I'm patient. I can handle it. Also, True Loves Volume 2 is out. True Loves is this excellent comic by Jason Turner. It's put out by New Reliable Press. The first volume, it's a love story, and it takes place in Vancouver. And so the first part is the first part of the love story. So I'm looking forward to the second part because it's a collection. He posts the strips online on his own website, Jason Turner's own website. So you can check that out there. But I'm very tangible. I'd much rather have the actual book than sit through a whole bunch of internet strips, but that's just me. Also, the Perry Bible Fellowship Almanac is coming out. It's the second volume of Nicholas Gerwich's comics. Oh my god, they're so funny. Like, I cannot explain to you how hilarious they are. You just look it up. It's a very distinct name, Perry Bible Fellowship, and you'll find his comics. You will not be able to get enough of his comics. They're just, here they're comic strips. They're beautifully colored, amazingly illustrated, and then their humor is so dark and, like, hilarious and sick and funny and excellent. Anyways, this collection, the Perry Bible Fellowship Almanac, is coming out through Dark Horse Books, and it is a follow-up to his last one, and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, that's all you need to know. He's awesome. Just go look it up right now. Perry Bible Fellowship. Stop listening to me. Go look that comic up. It's totally worth not listening to me for another 20 minutes. Although, actually, what am I saying? There's a Bernie Moreau interview that you have to listen to. So ignore me, but listen to Bernie. Anyways, you're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. That's the end of the comic book news. Oh, yeah, I did go see Monsters vs. Aliens. My realistic review is, I'm not going to lie to you, the second half's kind of dull. It's a predictable movie. But the best thing about the movie was the 3D. And after watching it in 3D, I kind of want all my cartoons to be in 3D. I initially thought it was a trend, and now I'm just kind of like, I'm falling for the trend. Sorry, cartoons should all be in 3D. There's one point where people in the movie were like getting up in front of me, and I was ready to tell them to sit back down, thinking they were like actual people in front of me. Anyways, I really love this 3D thing. Now I can understand why the kid I babysit is so bonkers for it. But initially I was kind of like, this is a cheesy trend, just like in the 50s, and eventually it'll die, just like in the 60s. But I don't know, like, I really enjoyed seeing Monsters vs. Alien in 3D. It made it all that much more better. Anyways, we're going to continue on with some more of the interview with Bernie. But first, we're going to play the Feelies. Bernie picked all the music for this show, and he picked all Feelies all the time. So this is For a While. It's off their CD Only Life from 1988. CJLO, 1690 AM.
Thank you.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. That was The Feelies, was the song For a While, chosen by Bernie Moreau. Now we're going to quickly go to the interview with him, because I want you guys to listen to him some more. He's got some great stories. But I just wanted to quickly say, you know, he's done a lot of work on Grendel, like a lot of work. And while the majority of it is the coloring of it, you know, he's definitely left his mark on that series, even though it was Matt Wagner's. From 87 to 88, he did The Devil Within, and he did it all. He wrote and he illustrated and he inked it and he colored it. And actually, no, I don't think he wrote it. I think Matt Wagner wrote it. But then from that point on, he did a lot of coloring. So he worked on the Grendel original series from 34 to 40. He also did the Silverback miniseries preview of Grendel. He also did Grendel War Child coloring on that. Pat McEwan illustrated it. He did Grendel Devil's Hammer, Grendel Devil Under Mist, Grendel Devil Tracks, Grendel Devil Eyes, Grendel Devil by the Dead, or Devil by Deed, sorry, and Grendel the Devil's Apprentice. So, like, he's very involved in that series, even though it's Matt Wagner's baby. I feel personally that Bernie Moreau had a lot to do with it. So we're going to continue with the interview. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, and this is Bernie Moreau.
Grendel was very kind of a hot comic book at the time. The first 10 issues have been done by the Panda Brothers, who are very powerful artists.
Yeah, I got to say, that's one of the craziest things about Grendel is the fact that he picks some really... not, I don't want to say wacky artists, but not exactly your stereotypical superhero cartoonists. You know what I mean? Like, the Panda Brothers style, whenever I introduce that book to anybody, they're always really taken aback by it, because it is kind of wacky. I love it, though. I'm a big Panda Brothers fan.
Sure. Well, the first time I saw their work, I thought, this stuff looks like Nagel, the illustrator from Playboy, who does very slick kind of female busts kind of things. I remember Duran Duran.
It's really work. 80s.
Yeah. And I thought, it kind of looks like that. But then they really grew. They grew a lot. And if you look at work they've done, like Triple X, which was a collection from Dark Horse, very political, very beautifully, beautifully done. They've really grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And so Matt Wagner was always very bold in his choice of artists. And I was lucky enough to be somebody that his whim favored that day, you know.
Now, how did you feel going from your own creator title that you pretty much did everything on to just illustrating somebody else's work?
It could have been disastrous, but Matt Wagner made it a really free environment where he really encouraged me to contribute and be a part of the process. It was really kind of like an idyllic situation that spoiled me for the hell that's out there. I mean, I've worked with other editors who insist on nonsensical changes that you can't argue. Ultimately, you're just like a rough tradesman that they really can't believe is talking back to them, you know? Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. So it could have been really rough going from total freedom to a really tightly restricted thing, but Matt made it a lot of fun.
And how much of Grendel have you done in total? Was that the only thing you've done? Is those three issues?
I did three issues.
Because you've also colored quite a few of them, too.
Yeah, I went on to work for almost 10 years on that franchise in various functions there. I colored for quite a bit of it and did some inking and worked as Matt Wagner's assistant on some earlier issues. So I feel like I'm part of the history of that character.
How do you feel about that character?
Well, it's like a farm, you know, the Grendel farm. It did a lot of years on that farm, you know. You know, it was with Comic-Con, with Dark Horse. They're both pretty stripped down kind of business entities. Never a lot of money there. And so after a while, I just started saying, well, if I'm going to work for almost nothing, let it be on my own work. Mm-hmm. Let's make a mark instead of just being somebody's helper. And so, you know, trying to be independent. But then, of course, work drops off into nothing. And so since then, I've taken part-time jobs and supported myself doing various other things, but still always with an eye towards making good comics.
So one of the interesting things that happened while you were doing Grendel is you got a fan letter from Mike Allred.
Yeah, Michael Allred wrote me. He had just gotten out of the U.S. Air Force from Germany, I think. He was a cameraman and a DJ, you know, totally done it all. And he was very, very kind in his support of my work and offered to work together. And that led to quite a few collaborations that I'm very proud of.
Could you tell us about some of them?
Oh, well, his character Madman is basically, when he's not in costume, as I understand it, a fellow named Frank Einstein, who is the survivor of a traffic accident, who is operated on by a mad doctor and presumably given another brain with psychic abilities. And so he's a bit of a superhero and his memories are muddled.
But his hot girlfriend helps him out.
Yeah, and Michael draws a wonderful woman, you know. And over the years, his style has grown from something that looked kind of like early Panda Brothers or Nagel, like almost like advertising art, mm-hmm. into this really lush, thick brush style that is almost reminiscent of Yves Chalin from Europe, you know, like very, very bold contour lines, which I find...
It's very tight, though, too, his art style. Like, he's really bang on with the anatomy and, yeah, the style, too.
Yeah, when I first looked at his work, I said, you should stop using photo reference and just be more natural. And he goes, I don't use photo reference.
Nice.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting artist. So another thing that you guys initially did was Everyman?
That's right. He got a deal with Epic Comics right at the time when Carl Potts was kind of heading up their Marvel's more experimental comic line. Michael was just coming off of Graphic Music and a bunch of other projects that had given him more and more renown. And so he got Marvel to do this project where he wrote it and penciled it, and I inked it, lettered it, and colored it. And it was sort of a witch story about a young woman who lives in a rural community and is killed, murdered by sort of her misogynistic male neighbors who, you know, don't like her because she's a witch. And but really, they just try and, like, you know, rape her, but that doesn't work out, so she ends up dead. And she comes, thanks to certain magic, she comes back, but in the body of this androgynous man who has these sex organs that you never see, but apparently they're a blend of both, you know. I thought, wow, that'd be great. We got to do that on a splash page. But Marvel is so conservative, you know.
It's a really strange story when you consider everything Mike Allred's done since, because his writing is usually quite tame.
He's always been plugged into deep into his subconscious, I think. I really think he looks deep into his psyche for themes that interest him. And if you look at the work now, he's done quite a bit of religious work. Mm-hmm. He's into the Mormon faith.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of, obviously thought about it a lot. It'd be interesting to meet and talk with him again after 20 years.
And the other thing you guys did was the Madman Jam.
That was sort of the reverse of the Everyman project, in that with Everyman, he conceived it, he drew it, I inked it, lettered it, and colored it. Now, with the Madman Jam, I conceived it, I penciled it, he picked out what he wanted to ink and inked it, I contributed with inking as well, and then lettered it as well, and he colored it, his wife colored it. So that was an interesting switch up. And it's a compliment to how much fun he is to work with, that it's possible to actually see these experiments realized. He's really flexible and, you know, not an ego at all.
You've had some excellent collaborations.
I've been lucky, definitely.
When you were finished doing Grendel, you started doing your own solo jam comic. How long did that series go on?
Oh, it went on about, well, it's still ongoing, but... after about six publishers, I mean, it went from being published by Matrix Graphic Series, it went to Kimiko, and then from Kimiko to Slave Labor, and then, no, I might have that mixed up, but from Slave Labor went to Dark Horse, it went to Caliber. All of these companies were enthusiastic to take it up, but then after a couple of issues said, well, this isn't making any money,
yeah. So
we'll have to let you go. So I had like six different publishers, and the graphic novel that I'm working on now, To Get Her, which I've been working on for about 4 years and features Gordy and Janet from my series The Jam, that's, I'm looking at probably self-publishing that myself. But in this day and age, I think that's more possible than ever before, and I think cartoonists can really get their work out there by taking that sort of destiny into their own hands and investing a couple of hundred bucks in themselves.
Well, yeah, I mean, printing costs are so cheap. I know a lot of people are going to Singapore these days to get stuff printed because it's insanely cheap out there.
Sure, they even have Xerox machines that can make square-bound books for you in lots of, like, 10, you know?
And so while you were doing the Solo Jam comic, you were also doing various coloring jobs?
Yeah, all the work I've gotten from the mainstream has not been drawing. I've done I penciled two stories for DC. One was a Clayface 2 story written by Dan Raspler and in one of the Secret Origin books, the Secret Origin of Clayface 2. I forget what number that was.
I know the other thing.
The Riddler story. Yeah,
but it was written by Neil Gaiman, was it not? Because when I just started to do research on you, that is cited so often when your name comes up. I was just like, that's actually pretty illustrious to be with Gaiman.
Well, that was at a time when Matt Wagner was living in Montreal because he was courting his wife-to-be, who was Diana Schutz's sister, who was a native of Montreal. And we briefly shared a studio, so a lot of our work was kind of mixed up. That story I got apparently through Mark Wade, thanks to Ty Templeton, who said, I'm too busy to do it, Mark. How about you give Bernie Miro a try? Mm-hmm. And Mark Wade was experimental enough to go, okay, Bernie Miro, I don't know who you are, but Ty recommends you. That's good enough for me. Let's go. And so Neil Gaiman, of course, oh my God, I get to illustrate the Neil Gaiman story. That's an honor, and I was up for the challenge. Matt Wagner inked it. Joe Matt colored it.
Wow.
And I got to letter it myself, and to my knowledge, I think that may be one of the first non-standard DC comic books where the lettering is actually more personal.
Oh.
Because generally all their lettering is totally all the same, like mm-hmm. Very pro, very regular looking. Mine was much more organic, but I thought it would get stopped in editorial, but it wasn't.
And so was that... That's really exciting. As someone who would read superhero comics for a while, get to do a superhero comic. Is the Riddler someone you were ever interested in? Or
well,
did you be like, oh man, I can really go to town?
Sure. I was always a big fan of the Batman TV show growing up, and Frank Gorshin, the actor who played the Riddler in that series, always scared the shit out of me. So that was like a very special association that gave me some energy, gave me a connection to the character. But other than that, any sort of mainstream superhero, any character, no matter how ridiculous, can be still approached with a sort of sense of irony and humor and stuff. And it'd be interesting to work with any of these icons, you know, but the editors and the people in charge of the whole business, you know, make it so hard to get across the fence. They gatekeep so jealously that only their friends get in it, seemingly. Mm-hmm. And so the regular artists can pretty much get easily discouraged about the idea of trying to work on a Superman or a Batman story. So we might as well just publish our own stuff. And, you know, hopefully soon those things will all be in the public domain, because all these various business entities like Marvel and DC will get so tangled up in other businesses and conglomerates that it'll all come crashing down because some bank goes bankrupt in South Africa. And then all of a sudden all these Jack Kirby gems will be floating in space to be plucked by anybody, you know. I'd love to do a Thor comic.
That's a beautiful dream.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And that was Bernie Moreau. We're just talking about things, an ideal world, I guess, an ideal comic book world. Anyways, we're going to go to a quick show promo, and then we're going to play some more feelies. Bernie picked all the music for the show, and all the music is the feelies. Anyways, CJLO 1690, coming up next.
This is A-Dubs, and when I'm not hosting Eclectricity, I'm listening to Go Funk Yourself every Tuesday from noon to 2 right here on CJLO.
Oh,
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM, and we're just going to get right back into it. This is an interview with Bernie Morrow. Bernie has done some amazing comics. He's worked on Grendel. He has his own special comic, The Jam. He's currently working on a graphic novel called To Get Her. It's going to be huge, amazing, and beautiful. He's also done stuff with Planet of the Apes. He's appeared in Taboo, Woodstock, Negative Burn, The Chicago Reader. He's a very prolific artist, and he's a very good artist, so you need to check him out online. Especially one of my favorite things he's ever done, and it's kind of hard to get, but if you can find it, try. He did a collection of Tripping the Rift comics where he wrote and illustrated them, and they were so well suited to his style. They're massively gorgeous works of art, but of course they kind of have some toilet humor because it's Tripping the Rift. What do you expect? Anyways, we're going to get right back into the interview. You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is Bernie Morrow on the Onomatopoeia Show.
I've always been waiting for Marvel to totally dissolve into chaos. You know, they have all this beautiful stuff, but they seem to be really thoughtless about it. But lately, with all their essentials collections and black and white reprinting of old work and everything, who'd have thought they'd smarten up at the last minute? You know, like, now grudgingly I have to give it to them in that they seem to be using their resources better.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but it just breaks my heart to think about Jack Kirby and all those great artists who handed in their artwork and then had their pages taken and cut in half after the book was printed. As just like the standard printer saying, these are done. How do I mark it? I'll destroy them.
I'm chilled to the bone to hear that. I'm like, that's art.
Yeah. Or you walk into the Marvel offices and there's been a bit of snow in, you know, 1965 Manhattan. So they have artist artwork covering the floor.
No, that's so horrible.
The boots don't dirty the floor.
You're joking.
No, that's something I read in a book. I can't say, you know, it's like third hand or... It's not, it's just hearsay, but...
mind-blowing.
That kind of thoughtlessness, that kind of, you know...
I know, to somebody's work. You know, in daycare, we don't let them wreck each other's work. Like, if they knock over their toys, it's like, look, they worked on that. Now help them rebuild it.
Well, that's, you know, if only that had been part of our societal makeup more, then comics might be further ahead than they are today.
While you were doing all this extra stuff for Dark Horse, you also did some Blair Witch and anything else?
I worked for Oni for a bit doing when the Blair Witch film came out, they got the license for it, and it was pretty exciting. It was a big indie hit at the time, so I remember being inspired to work on some material there that turned into almost 40 pages of material in the end that I did for the first a one-issue special and then a three-issue miniseries.
Did you have to watch the movie?
They set up a screening for me, but I'm ashamed to say I didn't go because I'm not a big fan of horror films and I'm very susceptible to that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, waste time having nightmares because I can imagine horror, no problem. You know, I can do it just enough that I can feel it. And mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it was in the dark, a lot of blackness, you know. I didn't capitalize on that as much. It was kind of tempting.
Yeah.
No, well, I can do every page just different panels.
Well, it's
all
a
black.
Shaky camera anyways. Let's just do some lines and blurriness.
Right. But in the end, I kind of got into the mythos of the whole thing. I like early Americana.
Mm-hmm.
I find
it's like Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah, I find it a very interesting aesthetic. Mike Mignola seems to set a lot of his Hellboy stuff
for
in
sure,
that
yeah.
flavor. And I enjoy that.
And then you went on to do Dr. Robot?
Dr. Robot, yes. That's a manifestation of my love for art and toys from Japan. And definitely, I discovered anime with a little bit of help from my friends pretty late in the thing. I mean, when I was first getting into anime, Ninja Scroll was already out,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Yeah. But that's a classic, too, though.
Kawajiri is a filmmaker that I really respect. He's very dark and very scary, but, you know, Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust,
yeah.
You know.
Battle Angel Alita was my first one. That was high school.
See, I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, so. It's great. Apparently James Cameron's making a live-action version of it right now.
Oh, really?
That's what it's a rumor. That's what I heard.
Well, I'm still waiting for this wave of Hollywood mega 3D action that we've been hearing about.
Oh, it's coming.
Yeah.
I'm looking for it. There's a cartoon. It's Monsters vs. Aliens. I think it's a new Pixar or something that looks really good.
Yeah. And you got to wear, like, gray polarized glasses.
It's the new thing. It's funny because I babysit this kid and he's totally talking crazy about 3D. And I've got actually some old 1980s, like, Eclipse 3D comics. And he's like, you do? Can you bring them? And I'm just like, this is so weird. I'm sure when the first trend came around, they were all really obsessive about it. But it's going to die, like, in a year, you know?
I remember going to Walt Disney World and Captain EO, this 3D movie made by John Landis, featuring Michael Jackson, was playing.
That's bizarre.
It really was bizarre, but the 3D effects, they give you these, it wasn't one lens red, one lens blue or green. Mm-hmm. It was just these sort of gray glasses that you wonder what they did, but apparently they get opaque kind of at predetermined moments, like it's like timed or something. Anyway, the 3D effects were great. You know, this planetoid is like rotating right in front of your face. You almost have to stop yourself from reaching out because really looks like it's...
Well, IMAX does them, and I love those. I've seen like the under ocean ones because you're like touching the fish and they're right in front of you.
It's amazing the way that effect can work. So I look forward to well done stuff. And when you're doing 3D stuff, then you really have to design stuff with that in mind, so that a good designer in that sense could really make something really exciting.
What is Dr. Robot about exactly? He's a doctor.
He's like Super Mario, except he's not a plumber, he's a doctor, and he's about 4 feet tall, and he's sort of this Caucasian looking guy with a big mustache, kind of a little bit Italian-y somehow. He's bald and he wears clinical white. And he's not only a master of the human anatomy, he can also design autonomous robots and artificial life.
You're listening to CJLO 1690 AM. This is the Onomatopoeia Show, where we talk about all graphic arts all the time. And that was the interview with Bernie Moreau. He's an excellent local cartoonist. You can look him up online. His website is bem.spiltink.com. .org, and you'll see lots of beautiful pictures there and neat stories. And he's even, like, as an artist, he even has a CV up there, which I think is pretty clever on his part. One of the images I really like on that website is he did this beautiful sort of tribute to Jack Kirby with these angel wings and these comic pages fluttering out behind him. And I thought it made me tear up. It was so beautiful. Anyways, you got Lonesome Stranger coming up next. This is The Feelies. The track is called Sooner or Later. CJLO 1690 AM. I have no idea what I'm doing next week. I might do the Rick Trembles interview. I might do something else entirely different. But be aware that it'll be comic and graphic art oriented. CJLO 1690 AM.